This is Jim Inkster. Coming today on the show, we'll talk about President Obama's address to the nation tonight as WRKF will air the president's words about the potential attack on Syria and the latest updates regarding what's happening with negotiations as the Russians have become involved. Darren Goss, the new United Way leader for the Capital Area, is in the house to talk about the Capital Area United Way. Also, Zia Tamami, the veteran jazz enthusiast, on tonight's salute to the late Derek Gordon, who passed away 2 years ago today. Tonight at the Manship Theater, Derek will be remembered by his friends and many others. And George Brown on other jazz happenings at the Manship Theater. Now the news on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number locally. Outside our area, 877-217-5757. You may reach us by email, inkstershow@wrkf.org. Thank you for your support this week, and please keep the phones ringing. Your support is vital, and if you appreciate this hour of programming, it's important to contribute right now. In studio is a man who is raising money for the Capital Area United Way, the new man in charge, the president and CEO, Darren Goss, Sr., just hired a few months ago, on the job since July 1st, and he is here to talk about the United Way and a few other matters, and he is a fascinating gentleman, minister, ordained minister, and also a captain in the U.S. Army. Good morning, Darren.
Good morning, Jim.
Nice to see you, Captain Goss.
Good to see you.
You were in the Army for how long?
9.5 years.
9.5 years. And you've been a minister longer than that, have you?
I have. 17 years as an ordained minister in the Baptist denomination.
And from South Carolina.
Right.
I grew up in...
Grew up in Charleston, South Carolina. Went to school up in Spartanburg at a small college called Wofford College. And then got a master's degree at North Greenville University in Greenville, South Carolina.
The home of Bob Jones University.
The home of Bob Jones University. Right. That's correct.
Yeah. Well, you have spent most of your life in South Carolina, I guess independent of your Army years. Why did you decide to come to Baton Rouge?
Well, you know, I thought that the Capital Area United Way opportunity was the next step in my career as a United Way professional. I have an affinity for the Southeast, and I quickly found when coming to Baton Rouge that this is really the South. South Carolina was probably a part of Southeast, but Baton Rouge, like a lot of communities that I visited over my career, have needs. And so I really felt, Jim, that this position was both an extension of my calling in life and an opportunity to advance my career. And I'm just glad to be here in Baton Rouge.
Well, according to the United Way data of the Baton Rouge area, 1 in 4 children, that's 25%, lives in poverty. 70% of third graders scored basic or below on statewide reading assessments. 11% of the population is diabetic, and 32% of the population is obese. Now, those are not so good numbers, as we know. How is that relevant to what you do with the United Way?
Well, a part of what we do, many people know us as a fundraising organization. The piece that people really don't necessarily recognize that we try to do in the United Way with our community partners is really address the root causes of those statistics that you just read. So 25% of our children live in poverty. Children who live in poverty are far more likely to end up not starting school ready to learn and end up actually on a trajectory that will create them not graduating from high school and then becoming a burden on social services. And so what we try to do with our community partners is get at those root causes with the resources that are raised in the community and with our community partners to actually stop that downward slide and create opportunities to help people long term. And so that's a part of the community investment, community impact role that United Way is playing every day.
Now, you have a 2013 campaign goal of $9,050,000. Now, to put that in perspective, that's almost $25,000 a day for every day of the year. This was announced yesterday. Is this a goal for the calendar year or for the fiscal year? How does that work?
Our fiscal year is actually a July 1st to June 30th year. So this campaign goal that we'll collect or actually get pledges for this fall and into the winter will actually be expended next July 1st and will actually go toward the services and programs in our three focus areas of education, income, and health starting July 1st next year. The payroll mm-hmm. deductions will start on January 1st as we start making those collections.
And last year you had 47 partner agencies. Who are some of the most prominent agencies that receive United Way funds?
Well, I probably wouldn't classify them, Jim, as most prominent because all of them are very important to the work that we do. But just let me just list a few of them that people may recognize. Boy Scouts, the YMCA, Girl Scouts of the sort of most recognizable names. But then we have programs like Family Services, Volunteers in Public Schools, the ALS Association, and several others that run the gamut from education support programs to financial stability programs, and then to programs that provide access to health care.
I see the United Way of Greenville County, where you were before, provides about $6.5 million annually, so this is a little bigger operation.
Correct? Sure, sure.
And I guess Baton Rouge, the metro area, probably comparable.
Yeah, actually, Baton Rouge, the metro area of Baton Rouge is slightly bigger than Greenville County, South Carolina. And so we have a friendly inside wager between myself and others on my colleagues in Greenville to try to increase our campaign and our revenue and our work here in Baton Rouge to be competitive to what they're doing in Greenville.
We're visiting with Darren Goss, Sr., the United Way Capital Area President and Chief Executive Officer, and also a minister for 17 years and a captain in the U.S. Army when he was discharged honorably. So your early read on your new community.
Compassionate community, caring community, a community that actually has a different sort of paradigm. The people I've met here in Baton Rouge are very humble people, but at the same time very focused on improvement and being excellent. That's a good mix mm-hmm. and a good vibe for me. And so I really feel V and I, my wife, we feel very comfortable here because that's sort of our perspective.
You spent some time overseas when you were in the Army, correct?
4 years in Germany.
What kind of an experience was that relative to your experience in the United States, particularly in the South?
Well, one of the takeaways from my experience in Germany is that you can find people everywhere who care. And it's been my experience that both in Europe as well as the States, that's not a hard thing to find. And it's when you, as in my wife and I, my family, reach out to a community, in many cases the community reaches back in a very very positive way. And that's been my experience both in Germany and here so far in my 2.5 months here on the ground in Baton Rouge. So it's been very welcoming and very, very warm.
What do you think about the potential military strike in Syria?
Well, I'm praying for our president. I'm praying for the Congress. As a former military officer, having deployed overseas, I just think it's not something you do. Those decisions aren't decisions you make lightly. And I'm certainly praying for the troops, the men and women who will be affected by any decision that's made to do anything in the Middle East.
You miss being in the armed forces?
You know, someone asked me that question, Jim, a few weeks ago, and one of the things I miss is the camaraderie that you find, particularly when you're overseas in the military. I actually do miss one other thing that I miss is sort of the fact that you don't have to worry about what you're going to wear every day. Camouflage is pretty pretty easy to figure out. You just go pick out a uniform and you just go to work.
Well, if you dress as you do today, Darren's a well-dressed man on most days.
Thank you.
And the United Way of Baton Rouge, the Capital Area United Way, has a goal of over $9 million for the fiscal year that ends on June 30th, 2014. That was established yesterday. How far along are you?
Well, we have had right at 40 campaigns kick off. We had some pace setter or early bird campaigns that kicked off in the June timeframe, and we are actually assessing those accounts now to see where we are. We have had very positive response so far from companies that, quite frankly, are setting goals that, like ours, are reasonable yet achievable. And so we think right now we're in a good position to make that goal.
Well, Darren, we thank you. And Captain Goss, I'm glad you had your first studio interview for radio in Baton Rouge with us right here on WRKF. And I'm sure we'll have occasion to talk again.
Yes.
Take care.
Thank you, Jim. Bye-bye.
And we shall return with more after this brief timeout on WRKF. This is Jim Engster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. President Obama has tentatively embraced a Russian diplomatic proposal to avert a United States military strike on Syria by having international monitors take control of the Syrian government's chemical weapons. That move added new uncertainty to the president's push to win support among allies, the American public, and members of Congress for an attack. Tonight, the president addresses the nation right here on WRKF, and we're going to talk about this for a few moments. If you'd like to join the conversation, 877-217-5757. And in-house is a man who is known in this community, as he should be, as perhaps the foremost jazz authority, the great announcer Zia Tamami, who's been on LSU's station for 37 years. He and I worked together many years ago at that station. And Zia came to this land from Iran in 1972, 41 years ago. And your family is involved at high levels of international diplomacy. Good morning, Zia.
Good morning. Thanks for having me. Yes, indeed. My father was an international lawyer, and he was Shah of Iran's dad, confidant. And my oldest brother was Shah of Iran's cultural attaché in Paris and OPEC advisor. And now he is working as a diplomat for United Nations in Geneva, Switzerland.
So you're following this situation quite closely.
Very closely.
What do you think?
Well, the big picture is, you know, as most of our listeners know, there's two camps. There's Iran and coalition with Syria and Russia on one side. Then we have U.S. and Saudis and Kuwaitis and Qatar, you know, on the other side.
What about Israel?
And Israel, of course. And the guys who are writing the checks, as they say, for opposition to Syria are Saudi Arabia. Mm-hmm. And it's a war of religion between the Shiites and Sunnis. And this is something that is not going to be easy to address. And unfortunately, this is a prime time for al-Qaeda to take advantage of the situation and move in.
Well, many people immigrated to the United States and to this community from Iran in the 1970s. Most like you are wildly successful.
Thank you.
And at times like this, rarely do we get opinions from folks like you, as we should. But what do the people like you who grew up in Tehran think about all this chaos in the Middle East and how it affects your country, the United States?
Well, unfortunately, we have to go back to early 50s. 1953, when CIA made a coup to assist bringing Shah back and deposed the prime minister of Iran. So if we look at back, all that was a domino effect that, you know, the foreign policy was to protect some of these dictators. And when they fell, the extremists, they took over. And this goes all the way to Iraq with Saddam Hussein, that he was a brutal butcher, but once he was gone, there was a chaos. So the whole policy of protecting dictators in the past, that created that headache. And the military takeovers in Egypt that created a lot of problems with the freedom, and you know, dictatorship continues. As
how often do you go back to Iran?
Haven't been back here since 1975.
Since 1975.
Five, yes.
Well, Dan downtown. Dan, good morning. You're on the air with Zia Tamami.
Yes. Could you tell me, I mean, did the Shah hasten his demise with that big bash he threw on, I believe it was the 2500th anniversary of Persia?
Well, that was as they say, was the final sort of a mistake, that he spent all that money. And I think one of the key thing was the country was moved very quick as far as being Europe, you know, sort of a Western influence. And people weren't that ready to go that fast. At that time, in the 70s and late 60s, Iran was the most advanced as far as culture, as far as economics. But I think they went a little bit too fast. And Shah was not allowed to other oppositions to get involved, to voice their concerns. And I think that built up. And I think the biggest mistake was President Carter, who went to Iran and in front of Shah said, we got to have more democracy. You cannot have Western democracy in Middle East. You cannot give 100% freedom. There should be some controls and measures. I think that was the mistake that Carter administration looks back and say, I wish we wouldn't have done that.
He's not alone.
Yeah.
Vice President Dick Cheney said that when we, quote, liberated Iraq, they would be, U.S. forces would be greeted with parades and flowers and accolades. Didn't work out that way, did it?
And as a matter of fact, a month before that happened, I told my wife, who's from Lake Charles, I said, you watch, we're going to get in, and this is going to be the biggest mess you've ever seen in your lives, because there are so many factions in Iraq among the Shiites, Sunnis, Kurds, and other minorities, and it's going to be sort of a free-for-all, let's go and have a chaos. And that's exactly what's happened.
How much has that debacle in Iraq affected what's going on in the Middle East right now?
Absolutely. If you recall, first Bush, George Bush's dad, he made the most beautiful statement that we all forgot. When he defeated Saddam in the first Gulf War, he said, people said, they criticized him, that why didn't you go all the way to Baghdad and kill Saddam Hussein? And he said, if we do that, we destabilize the region. And that's exactly what's happened in the second Gulf War.
Well, his son didn't take his father's advice, did he?
Not at all, and he should have listened to his dad.
Well, he took Dick Cheney's advice, and Cheney, as we've talked, is a man who did not fight when it was his turn to fight for the United States in a war of his generation.
Exactly.
Now, we have a Secretary of State who did fight gallantly, John Kerry, and he's saying, let's do it. He's the one who's the biggest hawk on this right now, and I think the president is taking heed from his words. You understand what's going on as far as some people find the use of chemical weapons such that the United States cannot stand by.
Right. No, I totally agree with that. I mean, that needs to go away. I mean, even the Iranians can say they lost over, I don't know, 50,000 people when Saddam gassed Iranians during the war. By the way, that war killed 1 million.
Which war?
Between Iraq and Iran, and nobody talks about that. 1 million people perished between the two countries.
Well, you've lived in Iraq, Iran and the United States, and there used to be this sentiment, as we talked a few days ago, John Kennedy, in his inaugural address in 1961, he makes it plain that the U.S. is the policeman for the world. That's really, in these days, not a very practical
approach.
Well, that
was back in the 60s. No longer. We cannot be the policeman and be all over. I mean, look at the economy and the effect of the money that we wasted in Iraq and in Afghanistan. And what we achieved, we can't show much.
Mm-hmm. Well, my guess is that most members of Congress who now have been given the assignment of voting on this have not talked to people like you as much as some others who are not in Congress. varied viewpoints would be good before making a decision of this magnitude, wouldn't
it? Well, I think everybody's on board that I think hopefully through this opportunity that now the Russians proposing, hopefully they can compromise. Because what's going to happen? Number one, it's too late to get in. We should have done this if we want to bomb Assad and his group. That should have been done 2 years ago, not now. So we're not going to accomplish much. Plus, we're going to give the upper hands to these Al-Qaeda and other extreme Islamist group to come in and create another chaos like in Libya.
And what happens if he goes? Is there any guarantee that his successor will be better?
It's going to be a big void if he's gone. I'm not saying that I'm not promoting him at all. He's a dictator. But it's going to be a vacuum just like Saddam Hussein.
Why do you think these Middle Eastern countries cannot have full-fledged democracy at some point?
Well, it all comes to the point that when these greedy leaders get up there and they get the support of their counterparts and they're making monies and all that, then it becomes almost like a dynasty that nobody wants to go away. So they're president for life. You know, here's Assad families for 50 years. And they're minority. And this is parallel to Iraq. They're in minority, they're in charge. Saddam Hussein was in minority, but was in charge because the Shiites are in majority in Iraq. And that's always the case, that a very select group, they're on the top, and they abuse the money and the economy of the country. Iran is the same way right now.
Are the people content?
They're not. They're not. But the only thing, when you look back, and we take things for granted here in this country, security is number one in anybody's life. My father, who was Shah of Iran's confidant, he told me when I was a little boy, he said, going home, getting in your bed, and have security, that's the ultimate goal and the precious thing that we shouldn't forget. And that's something that in Middle East, when they see a dictator, that at least they have the security. Because, I mean, look at the Christians right now in Damascus. They've been harassed by the new rebels. And if you watch the BBC last night, which that's my source of news because I don't watch some of the channels
on WRKF
here.
All through the night.
So BBC reporter was talking to these Christians, and this Christian woman said, tell President of United States that don't send money to these rebels, that they think they're freedom fighters. They are not.
Mm-hmm. We're visiting with Zia Tamami, as we know him, as a jazz enthusiast and expert and announcer, and he is a native of Iran, came this way in 1972. And my guess is that you were safer as a kid in Tehran than your son was growing up in Baton Rouge.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, when Shah was in power, I remember we used to go out, you know, the nightlife in Tehran was incredible. You know, the nightclubs and ski resorts. I mean, it was like Europe. So we were going out and coming home 3 o'clock in the morning, and you can walk in the streets and nobody harass you. Those luxury days are gone.
Didn't you meet Duke Ellington as a kid in Tehran?
Yes, I was 7 years old, and we were at the airport, at the Tehran International Airport, and my brother was coming to U.S., and we were at in the lobby, and I went to the men's room to wash my hands, and I stood next to this really handsome and very attractive, you know, American gentleman. And he washed his hands, combed his hair, and pulled a bottle of Jack Daniel or something and went straight up and walked out. And I was like, wow. So I came out, told my brother, I said, man, this gentleman looked like a movie star. And my brother, very sort of a non-echelon, looked at me and said, well, that's Duke Ellington.
Edward Kennedy, Duke Ellington.
Edward Kennedy. Who would have thought that I'd come here and play his music for all these years?
And you've been doing that for 37 years on the LSU station, first WLSU, then KLSU, and now, or then WPRG, and now KLSU. Now, tonight at the
Great Night
Manship Theater, a salute to your friend and mine, Derek Gordon.
Absolutely.
2 years ago.
Year and
today.
A half ago, yeah. And he was great. We were blessed to have him back. He was the CEO of Lincoln Center and Kennedy Center. And he was well recognized, probably among the top 10 music directors anywhere.
Well, and one of the major performers tonight will be Kurt Elling.
Wonderful.
Fabulous singer.
Absolutely.
And a good friend of Derek, who's been here before. And,
three times.
Let's listen to Kurt Elling, who'll be on stage at the Manship Theater tonight, in a salute to Derek Gordon.
God, King above all other gods, lead us now so we can walk wherein the prophet said that we would trod. Buddha, tell us who to like us well. Teach us well to enter silence with the calling bells. Allah, bring us to a good alarm. Subjugate our wills to answer you like a mighty arm. Elohim.
That's tonight at the Manship Theater, and we shall return in a few moments and hear a bit more from Azia Tamami right here on WRKF.
To everything that's living on earth.
This is Jim Engster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Kevin Gallagher is producing, and a bit more time with Zia the Cat Tamami. Speaking of crime in Baton Rouge, you've had, what, three license plates stolen?
Three, yes. Three the Cat license plates. I finally gave up. I said, forget it.
So you had a Louisiana license plate. I remember the
those
cat.
Those are collector items. No.
So somewhere out there.
Somewhere floating.
My goodness, of all the things to steal.
Well, I guess, you know, we've got some.
But you've been Zia the Cat for a long time. And tonight, Zia, who was a good friend of Derek Gordon, who was head of the Arts Council for several years and died 2 years ago, tonight there will be a tribute to Derek. We mentioned Kurt Elling, the great jazz vocalist, also Vanessa Rubin. That's not bad.
She's incredible. As a matter of fact, those of you remember Carmen McRae, she's in that caliber as far as standards and very nice ballads. She's incredible, very high energy.
Jazz pianist Fred Hirsch, classical guitarist Berta Rojas. Mm-hmm. They're all on the same stage tonight,
yes,
at 7:30.
They each, I guess, perform about 25 minutes, so it's going to be a long concert, so it'll be a very nice, and we have an intermission, I guess.
Well, I'm sure you're enthused about this jazz renaissance that's been going on here, and Derek was a big part of that.
To give a lot of credit to Derek and the Art Council and the Manship, now folks in Lafayette, a lot of people they don't know, they just started their jazz series. So now they are getting into that. So what an influence. He established a real nice group here.
Well, an accompanying exhibition of work from the Derek Gordon Art Collection is currently on view at the gallery at Manship Theater. And Renee Chatelaine, who was with us yesterday, is back to talk about some things going on at the Manship Theater. And I haven't seen the art collection, but I suspect it's quite impressive.
Yes, you know, Derek was an amazing visual art collector, and we're just honored to have his exhibit. And also tonight, you know, it's a fundraiser for the Derek Gordon Fund at the Arts Council, which will provide, funding opportunities for things that Derek loved. And tonight you can even bid on some of his collection that will be part of the reception right before the show, 6:30 to 7:30. And it's amazing. I mean, he has some Chagalls. He has really extraordinary works, some Picasso, Elizabeth Catlett. I mean, the collection is extraordinary.
It sounds like it. And in a few nights, on the 19th, nine nights away, George Bell and Friends. And in studio is Mr. George Bell, the pride of Thibodeau, and one of his friends who will be on stage on September 19th at 7:30 is fellow who has been on this show and is a man about this town and others, Wes Warm Daddy Anderson. Kevin, let's give a listen to Warm Daddy Wes Anderson. George Bell is all smiles.
How can you not be, Jim? First, thank you for having me on today. It's a pleasure to talk about this event coming up on September 19th. You know, by day, I work for Baton Rouge General and as a senior vice president, but I've had a lifelong passion for music, and what a joy to assemble a group of Dream Team musicians to put on a performance like we're planning for the 19th.
Well, how do you juggle your responsibilities at the hospital with your enthusiasm for jazz?
Very carefully, but you know, it's amazing how well they blend. Baton Rouge General has embraced arts and medicine as part of our culture and as part of the healing process. And we have engaged musicians and invited musicians and visual artists to be a part of that. So I get to take part in that as well as play occasionally.
You still like to play, don't you?
I still do. I play every Sunday at church and then occasionally do a special function like this.
Where's the church?
Word of Life Christian Center in Darrell, just outside of Gonzales.
So I would imagine it's quite a performance.
It is. It is. But it's all part of the overall, you know, event.
Well, in addition to Warm Daddy and George Bell come the 19th, we've got Herman Jackson.
Yes. Drummer extraordinaire. Mm-hmm.
Harry Anderson.
Excellent bassist.
Thaddeus Richard.
Now, Thaddeus is an interesting person. He is multi-talented, plays multiple instruments. You know, I have the running joke. He plays every instrument on the stage except trumpet. And I've seen him do that.
Greg Ward and Todd Duke.
Yes. Greg Ward is a doctor, a physician, a physical medicine physician. And the tie that Greg has is he's an excellent percussionist and harmonica player, but he also is the one who was intimately involved in Wes's recovery.
Well, Warm Daddy Anderson is a nationally acclaimed saxophonist and music educator, and he suffered a stroke last December, I'm told.
Last November 28th. I was mistaken when I put December in, but yes, he suffered a stroke a week before my last Manship Theater concert. He was on the bill to do a concert with me in December. And we were just so devastated by that that he couldn't. But to his credit, he has worked hard and recovered to the point where he's back and he's able to do this concert with us.
Has he lost some weight?
He's lost weight. He looks good. He looks good. He is working hard at it, and his wife Desi is keeping him on a tight diet.
Well, the performance that's coming on the 19th will be his first since this episode, right?
Well, he's been performing in New Orleans at Snug Harbor, but I kind of look at this one as his welcome back to the Baton Rouge scene.
Well, and he spends a lot of time in Baton Rouge, as we know. And, of course, New Orleans is world-renowned, as it should be, for its jazz. But as we talked with Zia, Baton Rouge is building a substantial legacy as well.
It is. And thanks to people like Zia who you know, day in and day out put the music out there, and Derek Gordon. I mean, there are a lot of strong supporters here, and it's just a privilege for me to be a part of it and contribute mm-hmm. to it.
How well did you know Derek?
I knew him. I didn't know him as well as some of the others, but I did know him and just thought so highly of the work he did here and what he brought to Baton Rouge. I mean, it was evident, mm-hmm. You know, his passion for jazz and his ability to rally people around the support of the arts.
And Zia, you noted he was the head honcho at the Kennedy Center and the Lincoln Center for jazz, and he wore his success well, didn't he?
Well, he's well connected, and one of the beauty about him was, you know, we used to get together on the board of directors of the River City Jazz Coalition and come up with a list, and he always had good ideas. One thing that I got to give him also a lot of credit that a lot of people don't know, his business sense. very good, and that's very important when you're running the organizations like that.
Yeah, he left us much too early, and I know, Renee, you had many dealings with him before he passed away.
I did, and, you know, he was a mentor and an inspiration to me, and there's not a day that goes by even still where I don't feel his presence and his inspiration. And, you know, it's not just while jazz, it was definitely his passion, visual arts, dance, theater, the gamut. I mean, he really moved this community forward.
Well, tonight, 7:30, a salute to Derek Gordon with his friend Kurt Elling, Vanessa Rubin, and Fred Hirsch, and Berta Rojas. And the 19th, George Bell, Herman Jackson, Harry Anderson, Thaddeus Richard, Greg Ward, Todd Duke, and special guest Wes Warm Daddy Anderson. Both performances will be at 7:30 p.m. at the Manship Theater on the main stage. And tonight, preceding the event, will be a viewing and an auction for items in the Derek Gordon collection. You said he had a Picasso?
Yes, he does. I'm not sure that that's in the silent auction, but it's definitely part of the collection.
Okay, we'll see. Thank you for listening, everybody. Please keep supporting us, and we'll be back tomorrow. Stay tuned.